probably work.
Oh! Matthew Taylor. I'm not sure who headed it in. I'm not sure how it went in, who got it in. I don't really care. Here we go. Michael Keane, come on. Fully deserves. Brilliant.
Hello and welcome to episode 115 of the No Name Ever podcast. We said we'd try and squeeze a quick one out, and we have done so. The podcast started with the noise of Burnley's equalising goal against Middlesbrough at Turf Moor, sealing a 1-0 draw that keeps the promotion race tightly in the balance, although Brighton did close the gap to 2 points. We'll talk about the game in detail later, but we're going to start off with some clips from fans before the game. Natalie was talking to fans at the ground, asking how they're feeling about the promotion race and the game.
I felt sick all day, I'm very, very nervous, and I think I might wee if we win.
Confident, we're going to win 2-0.
1-1, Rhodes, Volks, 90th.
I'm really, really nervous. I hope we win. I think we'll win. Go on, Burnley.
So that was Natalie's Vox Pop action ahead of the game. But Burnley battled and battled. That strong jaw was in effect again. And James, a point fully deserved, as Kev said on that recording very loudly. Fully deserved for Burnley.
Yeah, I think so. It was a really difficult game. I don't think it was a pretty one, but it was quite open. So I guess there were quite a few, you know, attacking opportunities in it. But I think both goals really were quite ugly rather than nice and pretty.
Yeah, it was a strange one because it seemed to be a lot of goal-mouth action, Natalie. But I think the stats show there was only one shot on target from each side. So in front of goal, a lack of quality.
Yeah, I did see that as well. That was a really strange stat. And I think if you'd have sort of asked to predict what you thought the stats would be before the game, I don't think any of us would have actually put just one shot on target for either side. It felt like, as James rightly said, it felt like a really open game. I thought it was really entertaining to watch. I thought it was a cracking display of championship football. It was one of my most enjoyable games I've seen for a long time. But yeah, the stats seem to suggest a way tighter game, or perhaps a more nervier game than the action on the pitch seemed to evidence.
Also on the stats, it showed that Burnley dominated possession, which probably not happened for a long time. Kevin, both goals from set pieces. There was a question over whether it was a foul for the Borough goal scored by Jordan Rhodes. I think Sean Dyche felt it should have been a foul for us rather than Zen. Did you get a good look at that?
It was down the opposite end of the field to me, unfortunately, but it did seem that almost every time the ball came anywhere near a Middlesbrough player, they were on the floor. They seemed to go down very easily, and the referee was often very keen to blow his whistle when we did so. So I've not seen a replay. It was quite far away from us. So I've not seen that particular incident in detail, but I would not be surprised at all if it was a very harsh decision, because that's the way it seemed to go throughout the night.
And what about the goal itself? Do you think it was just a bit of bad luck the way it fell to Rhodes, or should we have cleared the ball?
You could probably go either way with that, but when you've got a striker like with the quality of Jordan Rhodes, I know he's not scored too many for Middlesbrough, but I think he's a player that does score in patches. And obviously he got a couple at Bolton, so maybe this is his patch starting. When you've got a player of that sort of quality, he's gonna find chances wherever they come. It's a bit like the likes of Andre Gray. He can make something from nothing, and you give Jordan Rhodes the very slightest hint of goal, and he's going to make something from it. So you could say unlucky, you could say slightly poor defending, but I wouldn't go with either of those. I think it's just a sign of the quality that he's got.
Fair enough. Apologies for any background noise on this week's podcast, by the way. We're all out and about recording this during the day, so please forgive any sound issues on the podcast this week. James, talking of sound, the atmosphere at Turf Moor on Tuesday night, probably the best it's been in some time. I know you've been frustrated at the lack of noise sometimes, but the fans really came through yesterday.
Yeah, no, I think it was actually sensational, really, compared to what we've been used to for a couple of years, probably. I mean, it was a really big attendance, I think, for, you know, Tuesday night. Obviously fitting since it was a top-of-the-table clash, but I think it was about 20,500, which obviously is fantastic. And I thought really the key thing was when Burnley went behind, there was that stunned silence, you know, a minute or two, but then the crowd really seemed to get behind the lads. And, you know, I think that sort of thing can be instrumental when you go down a goal like that in such a big game. You know, to hear the fans not getting on your back, they're still supporting you, and we could push on to get the equaliser.
Another positive impact from a substitute as well, Natalie. This time, Matt Taylor with the corner for the goal. He doesn't seem to get on the pitch a lot, but when he does get a chance, he seems to always come up with something important.
Absolutely, he does. I mean, how many times have we seen this? And to be honest, I was a little surprised that he took Gray off. I thought Andre had one of his best games he's had in a long time last night, and I was really surprised when we were 1-0 down so late in the game and chasing an equaliser at the very minimum. I did sort of have a bit of a jitter when Dyche took him off and brought the subs on that he did, but it just goes to show the quality of the squad that we now have, that we can bring on a sub of this quality of Taylor. And he almost scored himself just before the equalising goal. He had that free kick that just ricocheted off the Middlesbrough defender and out for a corner, and I honestly thought that was going to be the goal, and when that didn't go in, I thought our chance had passed. But, you know, we just seem to have this mentality, and Dyche has alluded to this before in interviews. We have this mentality from our individuals who come on as subs. It's like they've never been away from the game. You know, they just come on so switched on, so ready, and they deliver.
That's a really important point. The player who scored the goal, though, Kev, Michael Keane again. And that's 2 in 5 games he's got right at the end, having not scored for a little while. And it just goes to show, again, as Natalie's saying, the quality throughout the squad, that even when Gray doesn't score or Volks doesn't score or anyone from the midfield doesn't score, we've got the ability to contribute goals from all over the pitch.
Absolutely. I think particularly with Michael Keane, I think he's almost been our saviour this season. Obviously, he scored the last-minute equalisers against Middlesbrough and Brighton. And when you think back to the start of the season when we were struggling for goals a little bit, and he was our top scorer at one point. He pretty much single-handedly kept us going before the rest of the team got going, really. So he obviously had a long period without scoring, but I think the goals he had scored this season have all been really, really, really important goals. And ones we'll look back on probably at the end of the season and has been some of our most important, hopefully. And you've also got the likes of Matt Taylor. I think I'm sure I saw a stat saying that he's been involved in more key passes per minute on the field than anyone else in the league. And that was before the match. I might have made that up, but I'm sure I saw something like that. But you look at the amount of games he's played and the amount of goals he's been involved in. It's a really, really impressive figure. So to have someone like him to be able to come into the game and change it potentially, like, as he did. Was it his corner against Brighton as well? Can't remember.
Yeah, it was.
That stat I've got in front of me, by the way, it says, again, I think this might have even been before the weekend game, actually, but he'd made a key pass more often, and it was every 14.1 minutes than any other player with 5-plus appearances in the Championship in 2016. So that just shows how regularly he creates opportunities, even if they are from set pieces more often than not. Natalie, during the second half, before Borough scored even, Brighton was starting to pile up the goals in their game, closing that goal difference gap that we thought was going to be so pivotal. And once Middlesbrough took the lead, that put us down to third place. Was there any nerves at Turf Moor at that point?
Absolutely. The whole stadium was terrified. It was horrendous. It's like James said in his comments a few minutes ago, there was a stunned silence, and it just felt that when they'd, because they scored quite late on, it was about 72nd minute, something like that, their goal, you just felt that would there be enough time, would we be able to find anything, you know, and to be able to do it. And then these scores were coming through from the Brighton game, and it was just like, oh my God, this is horrific. And I remember, obviously, not being a huge surprise of the defeatist in me, but I remember putting my head in my hands at the ground, and I just said to my other half, who was sat next to me, I just said, this is it, it's over. I said, we're in third, and we're not going to get this back. We're done, we're in the playoffs, and I can't even do this. And it was just one of those where you just feel so helpless as a fan, and you can't control what's happening on the pitch because you're not playing, and your feet are kicking under the seat because you're trying to kick every ball, and you're screaming and shouting at everybody. And there was a period of about 5 minutes before, like James said, the crowd suddenly turned and really got behind them, where it was just horrendous. It was terrifying.
I'm glad the Brummers reverse psychology seems to work in person during the games at Turf.
Yeah, that's true. I levelled myself into making sure that worked.
James, the relief must have been incredible when that goal went in then. Another moment that we could well look back at the end of the season and think, that was it, that was decisive.
Yeah, I think it was massive, you know, particularly when you see the chance that created the corner in the first place. I mean, I think everyone thought that Barnes' effort was going in until it deflected wide. And, you know, we took the corner really quick because I think it did almost catch people off guard a little as well. You know, because normally, even when we are short on time, we don't necessarily hurry the corners along so much. And, you know, it was one of the scrappy ones, weren't it, where it was sort of bouncing around in the box and you just hoping someone's going to get something on it. I think in the end, Keane actually shins it in rather than actually, you know, kicks it. But they all count. So I'm sure every Burnley fan there was both relieved and ecstatic to see that go in.
Brilliant technique with a goal off the shin. Kevin was recording during the game as well. This is what he came up with. Enjoy listening to this. I'm sure it's going to be a roller coaster.
I'm going to be checking my pulse throughout the day to see if the pressure of tonight's game affects my heart rate in any way. It's now about 9:45 in the morning and my heart rate is a very relaxed, about 59 beats per minute. Let's see what happens later on.
So we're about half an hour before kickoff now. We're just outside the turf. My heart rate has increased to about 90 beats per minute. It's a really weird mixture of excitement and nerves. It's a beautiful day, great blue sky above us. Fans seem in quite good spirits. I don't know if you heard Rocky there shouting his golden gamble or whatever it's called now. There he goes. Yeah, let's see what happens. Okay, the teams are out now. My heart rate has increased to about 110 beats per minute. This is huge. This is it. Adam, how are you feeling?
There are no words.
Come on, Burnley! Okay, we've played about 15 minutes here and Middlesbrough have just hit the crossbar from a quite long-range shot following the corner. My heart rate is still around just underneath 110 per minute, which is about double what it was earlier this morning. My legs are shaking and we've got a game on our hands here. Played about half an hour now. Middlesbrough have had a good spell of pressure, but we've now broke away and had two very, very good chances on goal. My heart rate went up to about 110, but I think it's steadied down after those two chances now to around 100 beats per minute. So let's hope we can continue putting chances forward. Come on, Burnley. So it's half time now. Other than a couple of very short spells, which is probably how we're doing, it's been a very even game so far. That's been reflected in my heart rate. It's gone down to about 90, 95 at the moment. Feeling relatively comfortable, but it's still a very tight game and one chance could seal it. Let's hope it comes our way. Come on, Burnley. Oh, God, unbelievable. Middlesbrough have just totally against the run of play. Can't take the lead. It's gutting. Heart rate is still really high. And the crowd is still behind the team. We've got to come back and get this. Come on, Burnley, we can do this. About 5 minutes left now, we're piling on the pressure. You certainly wouldn't bet against a goal. It's a Matt Taylor free kick. That's the fact, just life of the corner. Come on, Burnley.
Come on, Burnley!
200 out here to have more. And we've put it level in the corner from Matthew Taylor. I'm not sure who headed it in. I'm not sure how it went in, who got it in. I don't really care. Here we go. Michael Keane, come on. Fully deserves. Brilliant.
So that was what Kevin was recording during the game, and we were also keeping an eye on our heart rates during the match yesterday. I can't remember whose idea it was, but we thought it would be interesting to see how our heart rates were affected by what was going on at Turf Moor. James, yours went scarily high at one point, didn't it? Talk us through how your heart was behaving.
It was pretty steady for the most part. I think the average was 85 beats per minute, which is actually a little bit high. Higher than I'd expect, sort of sat doing nothing. But I think a few chances sort of caused it to peak above 100, but the excitement of the goal got it up to 174 beats per minute, I think it was, which is quite high for non-sporting activity for me.
Someone called an ambulance.
That's very high.
But there was,
scarily high.
There was a lot of fist pumping going on, so that might explain it. And still nowhere near my max, which is 204, so...
You might set later in the season if there's more drama like that.
I'd really hope not. I set that going up a mountain on a bike, so that's probably a bit harder.
Natalie, your heart rate was climbing steadily throughout the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, mine wasn't quite as peaky as Birdie's was, but I think my resting heart rate in the afternoon when I was at my calmest was 68. When I measured it again when I was getting changed for the game and when I pulled my shirt on and it went up to 87. Then when I was going to the ground, the next recording was when the team news came through. And bizarrely, seeing that Tarkowski had not made the bench made me really nervous for some reason. It gave me a bit of a butterfly effect in my stomach.
Did you have a bad feeling about it?
I had a really bad feeling about it at that point. And at that point, I think it spiked up to 92. And that was, I think, about the highest that it was. I measured it again, not immediately as the goal went in, because I was jumping up and down. I was also having to contend with an elbow in the face from my other half, which is another one for injury corner, which seems to be a standard that I get injured when it comes to Burnley celebrations these days. But just after the goal had gone in and I'd sort of stopped jumping up and down, my peak was 135, which was just after the goal, so more than double, but not quite the 174 that Birdie's was, but still pretty alarming.
I don't think anyone's going to get anywhere near James. Must be all that fist pumping. Kevin, were you measuring yours during the game as well? What did your heart rate look like?
Yeah, my heart rate actually peaked just not long after kickoff. Actually, I think it peaked around 15 minutes into the game, and actually started to come slowly down after that. I think as the game seemed to settle in, it was a relatively open game. My heart rate slowed down a little bit, but then after they scored and going into injury time, it went well up. And then I think it was around 90 for most of the game. I think after going into injury time, I was around 110, and I think after they scored, I checked it about 5 minutes after we scored the equaliser, and it was around 130 then. I actually seemed to settle down during the match, but then obviously towards the end, that's when all the tension came and all the excitement.
It'd be interesting to compare these, maybe a game later in the season, to see if our heart rates get even bigger as the stress and the tension continues. One thing to talk about from the game was the latest comments from Iso Karanka. We could talk about Karanka's comments on the podcast every week. He seems to come out with some fairly odd comments, but the one that has piqued the interest of Burnley fans is one about long balls. He's complaining about our long ball tactics, even though statistically Middlesbrough played more long balls in the game. James, before the match as well, there was comments from Karanka about how if he had 10 or 13 Premier League players and had Andre Gray bought for him, he would have got promoted by February or something. What did you make of those comments?
I think they're all absurd, aren't they, really? You know, you can make the case that obviously we've got players who played in the Premier League last season, but ultimately they played in the Premier League last season and got relegated. So you could make the argument that there's evidence there they're definitely not Premier League players. Obviously, I think, you know, the reality probably lies somewhere in the middle, doesn't it? You know,
plus Plus, they were only Premier League players because we got promoted to the Premier League. That's how you become a Premier League player.
Exactly. So, you know, I think really, actually, you'd say it was a team with 10 to 13 people Premier League experience who were lacking one or two pieces to remain Premier League players. But I think the comments after the game are absurd. He said something like, the resort to long ball, which with the players they've got, is weird. And it was like, well, we were desperate, so we put boys who could win balls in the air on and lobbed it to them, which I think is maybe the most well-established, you know, last 10-minute panic tactic there is.
My favourite part about that comment, James, was that that whole entire line was, it was something like, they scored because they played long ball. And then he said, I don't know why they play long ball. Well,
it's because we scored.
Oh, God almighty.
yeah, it's just very odd. Natalie, the thing that stood out in the pre-game comments was that the subtext seemed to be that he was having another go at Jordan Rhodes. It's become quite clear that he didn't want Jordan Rhodes at the club, I think, for him to come out and say, oh, they went out and bought Andre Gray. He quite clearly rates Gray higher than Rhodes.
It's unbelievable, and I'm quite surprised that not more has been made of this in the press, or other people haven't seemed to pick up on it. I've never known a successful manager who's on the cusp of being promoted potentially as champions to the Premier League so disrespectful of his players and so down on what he's been given. So he's not a man motivator, is he, by any stretch of the imagination? And just think, some of the comments that he's come out with, the one where he said about Jordan Rhodes is not, I think he said, he's not a winner. You can see it in his face, or he's not confident, whatever. I think, well, if you're Jordan Rhodes, what, how do you want to perform for him? And, you know, you look at those comments on the back of the fact that he's already had a training ground bust up and been told to stay away from the team. And you just think, I think Catherine, who was on our podcast in the build-up to the game last week, she made a really good point here that it's all kind of been brushed under the carpet for them because of their recent success. But if it happens now that Burnley and Brighton win all of their games and Middlesbrough end up in third, I do suspect some backlash to come back here on Karanka. But I think at the moment they're trying to keep calm and not make a big deal of it, because number one, they don't want to rock the boat. They just want to get there. And number two, it may be irrelevant if they go up as in first or second place anyway. But it is very odd.
I think you're right. Like, those problems, they don't just go away, though. You can pretend they're not there, but you can't just repress them and hope. Kevin, the comments, just, it's hard to get your head around what he's trying to do. Is it mind games, or does he believe this stuff? Like, you could pick holes in what he said so easily. I mean, the players he picked out Gray and Tarkowski. Gray was a replacement for Danny Ings, who was probably our best player. We also lost Trippier and Shackle, who some would argue were two of our best players as well, and Tarkowski's only played when there's been injuries, whereas they went out and spent however much on Jordan Rhodes in January, whereas we bought a substitute defender. It just seems a strange way for him to try and look at it.
Definitely, yeah. It's like he's trying to do mind games, but I think mind games only really work when they're believable almost, and it doesn't seem as... It's so clear that he's trying to go do mind games, and he's almost taking it to such an extreme that you can just kind of laugh at it and move past it, really. I mean, talk about he would have got Burnley promoted by February is just ludicrous. And when you see comments like that, it's hard to take anything else he says seriously, really.
I think that's spot on. I mean, it doesn't make any sense for me to say that. Sticking with the Karanka theme, then, we've got a linked tweet of the week this week, so over to Natalie.
Tweet of the week, tweet of the week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week, tweet of the week.
We do. It's our little mini tweet of the midweek, which we're going to have a slight variation of at the moment. And we couldn't resist. Maybe it's just the gloating in us and the euphoria of last night's, but we couldn't resist having a little pop at our friend Mr. Karanka in our tweet of the midweek this week. This tweet comes from Dave Roberts, who simply tweets, "Dear Mr. Karanka, which was the long ball team from these statistics? Hashtag deluded." And is attached to that tweet a picture which has got the stats on it from last night. And it shows that, yes, Burnley did play a long ball game. They had 85 long balls throughout the game. However, Middlesbrough had 107. So it's just a nice little reminder to Mr. Karanka that maybe he should get his facts straight before he starts mudslinging.
Hashtag deluded is my favourite part of that book.
It's my favourite, I love it. Hashtag deluded.
Looking ahead to the weekend then, James, Burnley play first at Preston on Friday night. Do you think that's crucial, that we've got a chance to go back to the top of the table?
Yeah, I think that's a really huge game, to be honest, and it's going to be a really tough one. We saw last night that, you know, Preston are quite a resilient side, and you know, they did really well to get something out of their game last night, so I think they'll be difficult, but obviously I think they'd love to spoil the party for us.
Psychologically, Kevin, the fact that we go first instead of chasing as we have done at the weekend, that opportunity to put the pressure on, do you think that's going to be one of the most important factors, or do you think it doesn't have that much of a difference?
It's probably somewhere in between those, really. I think it's one of those things that can add that 2 or 3% difference to the mentalities of players, and obviously we know how fine the margins are at this time of the season. So it's that 1 or 2% that can make that big difference. But yeah, hopefully we can use it in our favour.
Do you think that's going to be important, Natalie? Or I remember the last time we played first, Dyche and some of the players were quite dismissive of it, making out that it didn't make a difference. But surely deep down, the opportunity to get back to the top and put the onus on Middlesbrough and Brighton, it's going to be in their mind, surely.
You certainly would have thought so. I think at this stage of the season, we have to be very clear as to what is put out there in the public domain as a strategy for, to portray an image of the club and to also not give our competitors any sort of advantage whatsoever. And it doesn't surprise me that all of those things are very much played down because they want to come across as calm and collected. But at the end of the day, there's just 3 games left now, and they will know that they have to win all 3. We cannot afford. Last night's draw was as good as a win from a promotion point of view. It probably means we may not win the title now, but it still keeps us in the same position where we've got to win all of our remaining 3 games. And if we do, we are promoted regardless of what Brighton and Borough do. And I think that they will probably not, in that sense, look at the timings of the games. They'll just know that whether they played first, the simultaneously or last, they absolutely have to win that game on Friday. And I suspect that is all that they'll be focused on.
I think that's fair. Now, we spoke to Catherine to get a Middlesbrough perspective a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. Joining us now, we've got Nick from the V2 Football Podcast. Nick, a Brighton fan. Brighton, 2 big wins back-to-back have put you right in the hunt. You're level on points with Burnley now. You must really feel like you've got the momentum in this promotion race.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the start of the season, if you said to me you'd be on 84 points, I believe it is, third in the league, with a serious chance of going up, I'd have sort of said you're absolutely crazy, especially how bad we were last season. But no, I mean, it's just we're just going from strength to strength. As I say, over the years, Brighton, we've struggled to score goals, but I believe we're now, the second highest in the league, I think, of scoring goals. A 5-0 win and a 4-0 win, it's just almost surreal to actually think we're actually doing this. And the only disappointment, obviously, last night was that we're not in the automatic promotion place. We're only third in the league, but certainly confidence is at high. And on to the next game on Saturday against Charlton.
All 3 teams at the top are in quite good form at the moment. There's no sign of a slip-up. Brighton, 4 wins in a row, isn't it, since we drew down there. What did you make of that game? Did you think our late equaliser was deserved? Was 2-2 fair overall?
I thought we were the better team on the day. Obviously, it could be potentially a bit biased, but I thought we were probably the better team on the day. We played the better football. I thought it was one of our best performances of the season, if I'm honest. There's obviously some major talking points. So I thought Joe Barton should have been sent off not once but twice, if I'm honest. But it's one of those decisions you can debate all day, and you probably still wouldn't agree on the was it a red card or not. But in that token, Burnley should have had a goal. Simply, if that goal goes in, they went and scored the other one, they could have won the match altogether. So I thought Burnley were very resilient at the back. I thought Ben Mee had a great game at centre back, along with Michael Keane, and obviously Andre Gray. He's the best player in the league, in my opinion. I think he's absolutely outstanding. I just thought on the day we were probably the better team. However, overall, a point was probably fair on both sides. I think, again, it summed up the championship. It was a fantastic game. And both scenes, obviously couldn't be separated on the day.
Looking ahead to the running then, Brighton at Charlton at the weekend, who obviously already relegated. They were relegated on Tuesday night, but then you've got Derby at home and Middlesbrough away to end the season. Even with such a strong run of form, those last two games are quite daunting, aren't they? But I suppose the flip side is that with Middlesbrough on the last day, Brighton are probably going to have it in their own hands.
That's the thing. It's the case of three wins are in the Premier League, as simple as that. No ifs, no buts. It's three wins. It's Premier League football for next season. So I think if we can do that, then it's obviously it's completely in our own hands, as you said it yourself. But I think Charlton, I think we should win. I mean, if you don't win that, then I don't think you probably deserve to be playing Premier League football next season, if we're honest. But then again, they're down. They've got nothing to play for, so they could obviously have that relax about them. But we saw Bolton give Middlesbrough a good tough game on a Saturday. They went 1-0 up, and then Middlesbrough had to bring it right at the death. So obviously, we're not expecting Charlton just to roll over and give us the points. We know we're going to have to work hard, but I'm hoping it'll be the case of the last two games, we get that goal just to really relax, and then hopefully the floodgates can start to open, and we can actually then look to catch, I think, Burnley on goal difference as well, because we're now got a better goal difference of four or so. That should be our next aim, really. But yeah, I think with Derby as well at home, we should be looking to beat them. I know Derby are a bit of a mad team. One day they can show up and look like the best team in the league. The next day they can show up and look like one of the worst teams in the league. So it's a... But yeah, ideally, in an ideal world, we'd love to be all sorted by Middlesbrough on the last day, or at least needing a point there. But yeah, if we just simply we simply look at it, three wins in the Premier League, then if we can go in with that mentality, then we should cross the line. But as I say, one thing I've learned about this season, it's just impossible to call it, and that's why we love the Championship so much.
Absolutely. You mentioned goal difference there. Hopefully it's not going to be that tight, but I think fans of all three clubs now are expecting it to go down to the last day, at least have something still to be decided on the last day. How do you see that playing out? Because Burnley are at Charlton on the last day, which on the face of it is quite a straightforward fixture. So do you think it could be between Middlesbrough and Brighton as a straight shootout for the other slot? How do you think it's going to pan out?
Well, there's sort of loads of options that can happen. I mean, there was even talk of it could be needing Brighton and Middlesbrough both need a point each, and then could it be the case of that sort of they just get the ball? It'd be like one of those World Cup matches where you just get the ball.
Yeah, that would be terrible. It would be terrible for us.
I mean, I think we have to look at it and say that it's just too unprofessional to do that, and it's not fair on Burnley. And but I think you'll see a very packed defensive midfield that game. I think both teams won't certainly show that much enthusiasm going forward, but I think still with the running, you've got to probably say Middlesbrough and Burnley are probably the favourites. Mind you, though, I think Middlesbrough have probably got the easiest running, given they're at home to us on the last day. And I think they've got Birmingham away and Ipswich at home. We've got, you lot got Preston away, which is I think that's the make or break game. I think if you can win that, you'll be fine.
We
play
first this weekend as well. We play on Friday, so we've got a chance to go top, which puts the pressure
away. It's a bit of a Lancashire derby, isn't it, Preston? Yeah. I don't know how far
they beat us earlier in the season as well. So
did they? Well. Oh, I say, I think that could be. I mean, I don't know how big the rivalry is between you guys, but it's obviously Lancashire derby. It's a close derby, so I'm hoping that, that could be the one. Obviously, not trying to be rude or anything to you guys, but I'm hoping that could be the slip up for one of the two. But then Middlesbrough home to Ipswich, Mick McCarthy. We've seen how he is. He doesn't tolerate He doesn't tolerate poor performances. He doesn't expect his teams to roll over, and he always gets a solid side. So you never know, Ipswich could sneak a point there. And then they're at Birmingham. Obviously, Birmingham will be Birmingham's last home game of the season. So obviously, you always want to go out of you always want to bow out with a win for the summer break. I don't know who are the other two. I know you said you got Charlton away on the last day.
Have
you got
QPR phenomenal at home next weekend?
Yeah, I think that should be a comfortable win there, but. I think, Burnley have got... I think everyone's got their sticky game, really. I think Burnley have got the Preston away. I mean, we've got Derby at home, and then Middlesbrough is probably Birmingham away of everyone's sticky game. But, as I say, it's so tough to call. I'm just hoping, we can just simply focus on getting the 9 points from three games, and it's Premier League football for us next season, which, as I say, if you said at the start of the season, is absolutely beyond belief.
If you had to stick your neck on the line, then what would your prediction be? Do you think Brighton can be in the top two, and who do you think is going to go up?
I think at this moment in time, I'm still going for Middlesbrough winning the league. Burnley's second, I think. I'm afraid to say. I think it probably will be. I think based on experience of them, I think Middlesbrough's squad is just so strong. I think we're now seeing how strong it actually is. And I think Burnley being there, done it before a couple of years ago. Obviously, I think they've got the best player in the league in Andre Gray up front. I just think it's probably going to be those two sides. But as I say, I'm certainly not ruling us out or anything. I think the picture will be a lot more clearer, especially if Burnley do go and lose at Preston and we go and beat Charlton. I think then the ball's completely in our court. And I think at the moment in time, due to Burnley's last minute goal last night, so I suspect Turf Moor's absolutely buzzing, that it probably is just about Burnley Middlesbrough favourites to go up.
I'm sure there'll be a lot more twists and turns to come. Normally at this stage, I'd wish you luck for the rest of the season, but it's more like wish you luck in the playoffs, hopefully.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's been a fantastic championship season again. And I think that's the thing. If we all go up, I think we will miss the championship of how tight it actually is and how exciting,
yeah.
And how exciting it is. But yeah, I think we've got to wish Burnley and Middlesbrough good luck for the rest of the season.
So that was Nick from the VT Football Podcast. Nick, feeling that Brighton might well miss out. Kevin, how do you see it shaping up now? There's three games to go. All three sides are in the same boat. Three wins gets you promoted. How do you think it's going to go?
I haven't got a clue. It's,
I tweeted last night that there is now a possibility that a club can get 90 points or even more and finish third, which would be horrible.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah, and I'm going to have to spend some time looking at other maps and seeing what can't happen. I suppose one maybe slight concern is that Brighton are scoring lots of goals at the moment, and we did have a healthy goal difference lead on those at one point, but I think it's gone down to four, I think it is now. So hopefully they can stop having so many big wins and we can maybe get a couple of our own. But yeah, it's. I really wish I was a neutral, because this season, from a neutral perspective, it must be fantastic to watch the battle at the top. As I am, I'm, if we get promoted, I'm sure we'll look back at it and appreciate the added excitement it offers. But right now, it's absolutely petrifying, and it's really scary. Looking forward to the upcoming games, because we've so little time left. And it's not just, like I say, it's not just how close the league is, but it's the quality of us three sides have got, us, Middlesbrough and Brighton, but that one of the teams is likely to get 90 points and not go up. So you've got to expect all three teams to win every game they can win. So the slightest slip up could be really costly. So what's going to happen? I haven't got a clue, and that's both fantastic and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I think permutations is a word that only seems to get mentioned at this stage of the season, where you're trying to work out what various results mean for your team. Even looking at the league table right now is making me feel a bit sick, to be honest. Games this weekend: Brighton are at Charlton, who were relegated from the Championship on Tuesday night. In fact, almost everything else in the league is settled, apart from the promotion race. It looks like MK Dons are going to go down as well. Playoff places are almost secured as well, with Hull, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday taking the other three places. So really, it's just down to who goes up and who misses out, Natalie. And it's going to be such a blow for whichever of the three sides to have scored so many points and been on such a good run. All three teams at the top are in fantastic form, but one of them has to miss out.
It's just horrible. How has this even got into this situation?
They should get rid of the playoffs. Get rid of the playoffs this year. Just have three automatic promotions.
And we're done.
That would be much fairer.
I think I share Kevin's just confusion with all of this. I genuinely don't know how this is going to go. For me, I think it's down to two fundamental principles. If Burnley do not win all three of their games, they will finish third. If they drop, even if they just draw one of those three games, I think they will finish third. I think it's that important. It's three wins and nothing for us. So let's assume that Burnley win all those three games and that they are promoted. Then it's just going to come down to Middlesbrough versus Brighton in the last game of the season. And you know what? If I had, it's almost a coin flip. But if I had to guess now, if I had to back one of them, I would back Brighton. And with Middlesbrough coming third, I just feel that's on the assumption that Burnley don't drop any points. If we drop any points, then that's it, I'm afraid. But I think that's my gut instinct this morning, is that I think that that's how it's going to go. Who knows?
The fear for me is that we do slip up either at Preston on Friday or against QPR, which is on paper quite a straightforward game, but at this stage of the season, I suppose none of them are. But if we slip up and then it's not in our hands, Nick raised the frightening possibility that on the last day, if Middlesbrough and Brighton are far enough clear, they could draw and lock us out of the promotion place, and it wouldn't matter what we do at Charlton, which is awful to think about, but it is a possibility unless we do our jobs and get started with a win at Preston on Friday. We talked about the Preston game quite a lot of detail last week on the podcast, so we'll round off with predictions for that game. Friday night at Deepdale, in front of the TV cameras, I'm sure it'll be a big crowd at a finally finished Deepdale. I think it's finished for the first time since we've been there. Natalie, the reverse psychology didn't quite work for the last game, but I assume you're going to stick with it for this one?
Yeah, I've got a really bad feeling about Friday night. it's just got banana skin written all over it, and it would be just so Burnley-like to go and lose at Preston on Friday night and last night to be all for nothing. So I'm going to go with a very horrible 2-1 win to Preston.
I'm absolutely terrified. I'm going to be there, which I think I prefer to trying to listen to it on the radio at work, but I don't know. I mean, it's going to be unbearably tense. Kevin, give us a prediction.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. This is Preston, obviously, they've shown in 2016 they've got a lot of quality in the side. I think at one point they were one of the form teams in the league. It's definitely got banana skin, particularly with being a local game. They'll be well up for it. Local games form, it's a cliche, but form goes out of a window. I think they're going to score, but I've got to go with a Burnley 2-1 win.
I think it might be a draw, so hopefully Kevin will be the right one out of the three of us. We lost James to a work meeting, but I'm sure he would have predicted 6-0 Burnley with an Andre Gray hat-trick, so I'll leave that in there for him. That's it for this week's podcast, then. We'll be back probably Monday or Tuesday to hopefully talk about a Lancashire derby win and possibly Burnley at the top of the table. Thanks to Nick, the Brighton fan, for joining us, although he did plant that awful idea of a draw on the last day, locking us out of the promotion places. Thanks to Kevin, Natalie and James for coming along as well. If you've got any feedback about the podcast, please do get in touch. You can get us on Twitter at NoNameNet, or you can email us. Email address, as ever, is podcast@nonameNet.net. But that's it for this week. Try and keep your heart rate under control for the next few days, everyone, and we'll be back soon. Goodbye.